Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is May speaking to you live, and it is September 12th, 2016, and finally the heat has broken for a couple of days, giving us some rest here in New York. I don't know what it's like in Nashville, Cynthia.
Down here in Nashville, yeah, you know, it's not bad. I actually, I was walking yesterday down my road, and there's leaves already falling out of the trees and everything here, so it has cooled off a little bit. But see, here in the South, they have a whole bunch of different kinds of summers, May. They have little britches summer, cotton britches summer, blueberry summer, you know. So there'll be another summer kicking along here like any second, and it'll go back up into the steamy digits. But for now, we're enjoying a little
respite. Are you kidding?
From it.
I mean, all we've had is heat wave here on the East Coast, and it's been so sweltering. I'm sweltering. I just couldn't believe how hot it's been. And then, you know, right now it's cooled off, but they said Wednesday it's returning. We're back closer to near 90.
Sorry about that.
With humidity.
Sorry about
that.
Well, this is our first live show. We took a little break for Labor Day, and we're back. And I was out in Los Angeles for a couple of weeks. The ex-husband had a reading of a screenplay he wants to direct, and I did a Lucy Ricardo and horned myself in on that, so that was kind of fun. But
I hope
I'm back.
I
I'm
hope
back
it
on
turns
the farm.
Out well. I hope
hey,
it
knock
turns
on wood.
Well.
I hope it does for him too. You know, I have very little left on the alimony, so you know we gotta pray for us. Yeah.
Well, forget about me. I don't even go near that one. Oh, jeez. But I had a great dinner. I had a great dinner last night. You saw that on my Facebook, right?
You're killing me with the food. Yeah, you're killing me.
I know.
But you had an interesting dinner party, which.
Yes. I mean, my barbecue, you know, Labor Day weekend party, I had a lot of people and had a lot of musicians playing at it. And, you know, Ken Daschle, one of our DJs here on Q104, got up and, you know, on his bucket list, he finally played drums, and he played it with Joe Bouchard, who was one of the members of Blue Oyster Cult.
Did he?
Don't
oh
fear
my
the
gosh,
Reaper.
That- Yeah. That's a big deal for Ken, because I know I could see him chomping at the bit the time that I was there. So good for him. He can cross that one off. How did he do?
He crossed
How
that
did
one
he do?
Off. Yeah, did he
play
great.
Okay?
He actually did.
Yeah.
He played great.
Did they take the drumsticks away from him like they took the cowbell out of my hand? No.
I'm not going to – you know what? Sorry about that. No, he did well. He did well. But we had great time. You know, 6 o'clock in the evening, all of a sudden we had the cops coming to the door saying that neighbors were saying it's too loud at 6 o'clock.
Oh,
6 o'clock.
My gosh.
Yeah, well.
Well, anyway, you know, I'm glad we're back, and I'm glad to be starting off our show after Labor Day with a bang, because when I posted who our guest was today, you know, we have some faithful listeners, and we have faithful connoisseurs of music. And certainly, when you say the name Boyce and Hart, anybody who knows anything about music is like, holy mackerel. And here's a guy who, when he started out in the Don Martin School of Radio, May, and turned a boyhood dream of wanting to be somebody into a career. And certainly
Absolutely.
He takes his place along with Tommy Boyce in music history. And now he's written a book. And without further ado, we want to welcome to the show, let's see, he's a musician. He's a songwriter. He's an activist. He's an actor. He's an author. And he's got a new book out called The Psychedelic Bubblegum, Boyce and Hart and the Monkeys Turning Mayhem into Miracles. And without any more rhetoric from me, let's welcome Bobby Hart to the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, guys. It's nice to
buddy.
Be here.
Hey, good. Oh, it's great to have you.
Thank you.
Bobby, before we came on the air, we talked about yours and May's love of radio. So you guys, just talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, well,
oh my God. Go ahead, Bob.
I thought it was my whole childhood. I thought I was going to be a disc jockey because I just loved music so much, and I was too shy to be able to picture myself as an entertainer or being in front of people. So I figured I'd be a disc jockey, and I had a little make believe radio station set up in my room, and it got more sophisticated by the 50s. It had a Webcore tape recorder in there and double 12-inch turntables, and so I just put shows on and entertained myself.
And, you know, I mean, in those days, radio was so amazing. It was great. I mean, it just took you to another level. Every time I heard a song, I was like, oh, God, you know, when I remember when Hurt So Bad came out, which was one of my favorite. I mean, you know, you just listen to that, and you just – I could relate to all the songs back then. I can't relate, I hate to say it, to too many nowadays.
My friend Gary Strobel sent me some stuff today because actually today is the 50th anniversary of the Monkey Show going on the air on NBC, first show 50 years ago today. So he sent me some memorabilia, and one of the things is – the list of the top 30 songs on KHJ radio in that week of August of 1966. And when you look down the list of those songs, though, it's amazing. These are songs that you can hum every one of them. Of course, you know, I go back to the 60s, so of course I can. But these are songs that people would know. But the Supremes and Bob Dylan and the Monkees, is the Clarksville is just making its way up the charts, but every one of the top 30, almost without exception, these were songs that are still living and people can hum today.
Absolutely, and I look at it, when you hear the commercials, they go back, you know, to the songs that we grew up with, that we know of, because they relate. I don't hear too many of the new stuff unless it's something really a poppy, dancey type of thing. But on the whole, if you listen to it, that it's great to hear. You know, they did a lot with The Who. I mean, The Who came back with such a vengeance, especially when CSI came in. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I love the songs that you've written over the years. I mean, we were just talking about that. And, you know, and I just. I love the song that you know, you wrote with Tommy Boyce with I Wonder What She's Doing Tonight. I hear that on the radio station. I love listening to it.
Well,
it's great.
Knock on wood, we're still getting played 50 years later.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
There you go.
Oh, May, I forgot to mention too. He was an Academy Award nominee. Yeah, I left that little detail out. Sorry about that, Bobby. For Over You from Tender Mercies. I mean, you are all over the place. And I have to wonder, did you ever, when you were dreaming of being somebody back when you were having your little radio station and entertaining yourself, did you finally achieve your dream? I mean, or do you still have dreams beyond that?
Way, way beyond. And, you know, our dreams change from time to time. Talk in the book about how you adjust. Maybe you meet some of your first goals and you realize, well, maybe there's something else I can do. And we just kept going on and on. And I've just been so fortunate in my life to be able to actualize so many of the things that I wanted to do. When I first got here, 18 years old, and hitched a ride to Hollywood from Phoenix, where I grew up, I had $50 in my pocket in a duffel bag. And I got a job printing record labels right the first week, so I could pay my rent by the week. And walking to work every day, I would pass this little recording studio that had a sign outside that said, "Come in and see what your voice sounds like, $10. Well, that started to grow on me. Day, morning and night, I would pass this, and I would look at it, and I would think about it. And one day, I finally got up my nerve, and I went into this little studio, and I gave him my $10, and I made this little demo recording. And the engineer made me sound great, you know, with echo and everything and EQ. And I was hooked from then on. I dropped out of disc jockey school, and I said, I'm going to be a rock star instead. So it took a number of years of learning how to, because the first break I had was a record producer who said, "You sound pretty good, kid, but I'm only signing people who have their own material. So go home and write some songs." So I'd never written a song.
Oh, my gosh.
I went home and started writing, and I don't think they were very good songs, but when I brought him back in, he signed me, and I had a record deal within 3 or 4 months of hitting town.
Wow.
And it went from there, you know. And like I say, there was been 6 years of putting out single after single that were bombs that nobody heard, you know. But it was those 6 years that I was able to hone my craft and learn how to write better songs and learn how to sound better on the recordings. And I met Tommy right away. We're both 18. He's still living at home in a suburb of L.A. And we had the same record producer, so he would come in on the weekends, and we would hang out and just became hangout buddies. And then he got a break to go to New York and write for a music publisher back there, so I didn't see him for a couple of years. And then when I finally was able to join him in New York, that's where we started writing in earnest, his voice and heart, and had our first hits with Jay and the Americans and Chevy Checker and a bunch of others.
See, all the things, all the people I grew up on, all the songs. I mean, I had my transistor radio. Transistor, people
yeah.
don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Transistor stuck to my
Everybody
ear.
Everybody had one, right? It was like
yes.
It was like an iPhone. You just had it to your ear all the time.
No, oh, exactly.
It was
and if you got one, it was like the best. You know,
yeah.
May, she, and I'm telling your story here, May, I'm sorry,
oh,
but
God.
For
Please.
May, here she is, a little Chinese girl living in Spanish Harlem, walking up and down the street with her radio plastered to her ear. It's
yeah.
like, what at that time, nobody really thinks, okay, this is where this radio is going to take me. But
yeah.
look where radio took you both, you know.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, absolutely.
And I kind of had my own little... when I was going to school, I did take a broadcasting class, and I did marry my instructor, Bobby. Don't hold it against me. It was in the past, and it was a long time ago. But I did learn from that, you know, and I learned that I have no musical ability at all and have absolutely no possibility of ever being a disc jockey, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it did teach me that there was so much more to this than just, oh, you play a record, you get on the radio, and you become a star. You know,
right.
now you make a song, you put it on the internet, and you have your 15 cyber seconds of fame, and
yeah.
it's a whole different game now. How do you feel
it
about
is.
That? I mean,
well, you know, every generation changes, doesn't it? And it is totally different now because of the delivery systems. You know, the record labels had it pretty locked up for all of those decades, and there were... you know, you started with vinyl.
Yes.
And then
I remember vinyl.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
And vinyl is back now. Vinyl is like the making a big comeback, as you know.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I just moved and I had no place, and they said, "What are you going to do with these records?" Because I kept my albums, and I said, "Keep them." They said, "You're going to take it? You're not going to sell them?" I said, "No. These are my this is what I started out with. I love these. Whether I play them or not, I like reading the liner notes, the whole thing, because there's a whole package there."
Yeah.
So I have over 2,000 albums sitting in my apartment at the moment.
So then,
crazy.
Then we went to cassettes, and then we went to 8-tracks, and then we went
That's
to
right.
the CDs. And so every time that would happen, all the catalog, the record companies would put out their back catalog and reissue them again. And, of course, everybody had to buy the Beatles set all over again every time that happened. But then, with the advent of the Internet, everything has changed. They lost control of the delivery system. And now, in a way, it's good
yep.
for consumers. But we now have a generation of people who think that music should be free. It's just in the
mm-hmm.
air, isn't it? Why should we have to pay for it? And they don't realize
yeah.
how many years somebody, a lot of people, spent struggling, trying to learn to get better, and then finally learned how to entertain people in the way that was good enough that they would pay for it. And now that should just all be free.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it,
no, you're right.
it is
And you can't make
now,
a living
piracy,
from it.
No, you can't. And piracy in the movies where they're stealing stuff and download and making tape is one thing. But now you've got big publishing houses and this whole big thing with Spotify and Pandora and all that.
Yep.
I mean, you got to be kidding me. By the time
yep.
it sits down, you're getting, what, a half of a hundredth of a cent? Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah,
it's
and
outrageous.
They send me, I get these big envelopes. They're beautiful. They're not manila. They're white. and they're about, you know, big enough for me to live inside. And I inside is this long, all this paperwork of all the songs and everything, and then there's a check for a penny or three pennies, and it cost them 50 cents to mail it, you know.
Oh, I know. It costs
you,
more.
Right?
I've gotten a few of those checks, and
yeah.
I go, wow. I wouldn't even cash some of them because I said it's almost ridiculous. I almost want to hold on to it because I said, you want to see what a waste of money. You know, they said, I like some of the companies that said, we don't want to send it out until you reach a certain goal, you know, like at least $10 or something.
Yeah.
But
okay.
when they, you know, like when they send out 75 cents and you go, wow, it costs more.
It's crazy, but there are
even,
there are other ways to do it, and the kids know how to do it now. And you have to go. The thing is, you have so many choices. You can find music of all eras, and so in that respect, music doesn't die. The kids today are still discovering the music that we grew up with and throughout the decades. But you have to basically, the way to make music today, I guess, is just performing live. So you get a fan base and you go out and perform live and make your money that way.
True.
Well, here in Nashville, it's like I tell people all the time, and some of them get mad at me when I say this, but it is the truth, Bobby. You can walk down the street and hear people performing who are just as good as anybody who has big record deals right now. Nashville's just inundated with talent, you know.
Yeah.
And I told May, you know, I think sometimes about maybe standing on the corner and putting out a thing and saying, pay me not to sing. You know, because I'm so bad. Yeah, pay me not to sing. You know, because it's horrible for someone to say, oh well, you know, they're just a dime a dozen because that's their dream.
Yeah.
You know, and to tromp on somebody's dream is just. But it is really it's so saturated here, and the business has changed all over. The business has changed for movies too. I saw that myself out in Los Angeles. You know, it's like. It isn't even about an age thing anymore, guys. It's about computer-generated everything and how they can almost make people in movies now, and they can make fake voices now too. So it's kind of a wild, wild west, but I truly believe that there will always be respect for the old way, and the old way will come back around, and that's why May's hanging on to those records, baby. She's hanging on to
her
vinyl.
Hanging on to them. I'm definitely hanging on to them. I do love my vinyls. I mean, I have so many different versions of course, you know, from the old days, you know, all my Beatle records are from when I was 13.
Yep.
I actually kept them, my monos, and then it went into all the different configurations afterwards.
Yep.
So, and then, you know, thinking about all my old records, the stuff like, you know, Little Anthony and Imperial, I still have my 45s.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I don't think anybody know what 45s are of the newer set.
Probably not. They're the ones with the big hole in the middle.
Yeah.
The little ones.
And the little plastic thing. The little plastic thing that, you know, you'd lose them and then your little sister would hide them on you so you couldn't play them. Yeah.
I remember those guys.
I thought that what was great was in the UK did a good one. They actually, even though it was a 45, they actually gave you, they made the hole that, to fit, you know, like on a single spindle, like on a 33.
Yeah, you could bust it out if you wanted to put it on the big the big spindle. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I thought that was a great way of doing it. So because we always kept losing those spindles.
Play it either way. Well, that was a sales ploy from RCA, who was not only a record company but a manufacturer of record players, what we call them, record players. So they made, let's make a thing with a big hole in the middle and nobody else can play. You have to play RCA records and you have to buy a machine to do it.
Oh, was that? I know. And
that was
course,
the beginning,
you know,
of it, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I just broke, unfortunately, somebody had stuck something on my records. I didn't realize there was a couple 78s underneath and it fell on the ground. And boy, did it crack.
Yeah.
Don't even know how heavy the 78s are.
That's right. Yes. So that was a big step forward when they made the 45s that didn't break so easily.
Yes, and that was great because it was lightweight to carry.
Yeah.
Psychedelic bubblegum. It's what I liked about it was you actually name names of people who guided you, distracted you. You know, led you on this journey, and you know, it's, and some of them, of course, are not with us anymore because you were a young lad and they were older people. And obviously your journey's not over and you still have more to give. What are you doing now as far as music goes?
Well, Psychedelic Bubblegum was something I had wanted to do for a long time because I wanted to set the record straight on so many things. I heard stories told so many different ways. And Tommy and I were there from a year before the show went on the air working on the Monkees project. And so I'm one of the only guys left who can tell the stories the way from being there from that perspective, watching the auditions of the Monkees and so on. And to tell the story of my life, but it was also an endeavor to try to give back a little bit and share some of the things that I felt had helped me achieve the success that I had with Tommy and with others. And so there, as you probably noticed when you read, we had these pages with borders around them called Stepping Stones Through the Potholes of Life. And
it's very
cool. We talk about things like visualization, and we talk about things like concentration and willpower and so on. And so we got into a little bit of that. And after the success, when the book first came out, it was number one in our category, Pop Biographies, for several weeks. And, of course, the Monkee fans and pop music fans in general really supported that. And so I was really gratified. So we were asked, my writing partner and I, Glenn Ballantyne, have been asked to come to different places and do seminars and speaking engagements. And so we're in the middle of our second book, which is not, of course, going to be another biography, but it'll be a self-help book on creativity. And so we're sharing things that we've learned separately and together about what, you know, how to maximize creativity, which we all have in one form or another. And it's not just creativity of writing songs. It's creativity in the workplace. It's creativity in relationships. And so we're in the middle of writing that book now and doing these speaking engagements.
Are you going to print the large print edition? Because I need it, okay?
Yeah.
I need it.
You can do that.
You know, I enjoyed the fact that, you know, you do recognize that nobody is an island, and you know it does take a lot of other influence and input for people to get to where they want to go. And it's nice to see that you acknowledge the people that helped you get there, and also the people that tried to stand in your way. And I think that's ballsy. I think it's great to see.
We try to stay positive through all of that, and we did have the result was that our time. You know, you hear all of these horror stories from others at that period about how they were fooled and stolen from and all. And we didn't really encounter much of that. And I think it had a lot to do with our attitude and the fact that when we got knocked down, we wouldn't stay down long. We'd get back in the saddle and not dwell on our losses, but dwell on where do we go from here. And you know, that's my story is mainly positive, but the stories in detail of how we wrote the songs and the journey. I've been told that it's very interesting reading, and I'm very gratified with the reception that we've gotten. You know, the title Psychedelic Bubblegums, it sometimes can be misleading because it's not a book about drugs. It's a book about the music. And
right.
The fact that Tommy and I were known as the kings of bubblegum music at that time, because we were writing songs for Herman's Hermits and Jay and the American, the first half of the 60s type artists. But when we got signed by Screen Gems Music to come back to California, just at the perfect time in 1965, we encountered all this new music that was happening on the West Coast that they were calling psychedelic music. So we started incorporating some of the feedback guitar and some of the Indian instruments on our productions. And so I said it would be more accurate to describe our music as psychedelic bubblegum. That's what the title
is. That's hilarious. Well, I hope that you come back and talk to us
right
when this next book comes out.
Well, thank you. I'd be happy to do that. That would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much out there. You know, your songwriting, your songs, they last. They're lasting. They're ones I remember, and
yeah,
I know people remember.
And you guys are the gatekeepers. See, you are. You're the gatekeepers. There has to be history written down, and written down the way it happened by the people who actually experienced it. It's important.
Yeah.
So, you know, I
that's what we wanted to do.
I
yeah.
commend you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for being on our show, and, you know, we'll be speaking to you when the new book comes out.
Okay, it's been my pleasure. You guys have a wonderful day, and thanks for having me on, and we'll hope to talk again.
You're right.
Cool.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for coming on, Bobby.
Thank you.
Have
thank
a great
you.
Day. See ya.
You, bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, my gosh.
What a nice guy.
Yep. And his book is very positive for anybody who's a wannabe songwriter, author, person, just a person. You know, he's very spiritual too. We really didn't get into that much, but you know, he was an activist back in the day. Worked with Robert Kennedy. I mean, the man is—he's deep, May. He's deep. He's beyond.
I know.
Okay?
You know what?
But,
and but you know what? People, what I was having this conversation. I think it was last night, even with all the people. You know, the day the people don't work as hard, they don't understand what it took for the people back then when they were writing the songs and they pounded the pavement. And that's the thing.
No, there was no email. There was no cell phone. It wasn't like you could just, you know, pull your phone out of your pocket and say, hey, listen to this. It didn't happen that way.
No.
You know,
we had promoters, we had promotion men. You say, oh, God, how do I get them to the radio station? I mean, people were just pounding the pavement. And it's, you know, they when they got a hit, it was so appreciative. Listen to him. When you hear him speak, you know, he feels blessed by the fact that he's done so well. And he doesn't neglect. It's not about, you know, hey, I did it and nobody else. And it's everybody. It takes a village. It's that line. It takes a village to make that one.
Oh, well,
thing
and
happen.
He's very honest about the whole monkeys thing. And did you know that the theme to the soap opera Days of Our Lives?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so over 300 songs, 42 million records. I mean, he's part of music history. And the book is great. The self-help book, I think, will be really interesting because Lord knows we all need a little bit of that. So, you know.
I mean, we're
in the large print. In the large
right
print.
Right now. Yeah. You know what I did this weekend? You know, I just spent all – it took about, you know, 50 years of whatever, you know, with the monkeys and the song. I spent – it's also 50 years of Star Trek. So I was watching BBC America. Yeah, I was watching all the original Star Trek.
You're a closet Trekkie. I didn't know that about you.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that about you.
Loved it. So anyway, oh, God, we're coming down to time already. We're only a minute out.
What's going on in May Tang world? What's going on in
May
Tang world this week?
Nothing much. I'm doing some filming on some stuff, but for documentary. I should be on the radio soon. I'll make an announcement. It's October 2nd. I forgot who I'm doing the interview with. Bob Wilson, is it? Anyway, whoever, it'll be on my Facebook. So that's what I'm doing.
Oh, cool.
And then I'll be doing Chiller with, guess who they have?
That's
Tim Curry.
Who?
Tim Curry. He's going to be
fabulous. Oh, that's fun.
Oh, I know.
You're doing that with Frida Kelly, right? So,
yes,
you're going to have such a good time.
Yeah.
Well, listen,
before
we go off the air next, a big shout out to Gary Raychak, our agent, who gets us all these fabulous guests. And next week we have Kate Taylor. So excited
Sister
about that.
Sister Kate. I haven't seen Kate
in a long time.
Sister Kate
with us. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's and I actually have a little Nashville surprise for you who's going to be coming up as soon as I can wrangle him in and set up the time. So,
okay.
Anyway, with that, we are out of time, my darling.
All right. And listen, so everybody have a great week. We'll speak to you next week. And you have a good one, honey.
Thank you, babe. I'll talk to you later. Break your legs today.
Okay.
And that was Miss May Pang. I'm Cynthia Nielsen, and you've been listening to Dinner Specials on Blog Talk Radio. Bye, everybody.
Mm-hmm.